This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I recently found out that you can see a personal dietitian covered by insurance. There's this platform called Nourish that will match you with a dietitian based on whatever your concerns are, whether that's weight loss, eating disorders, autoimmune conditions, or something else. They're actually a network with major insurance providers, so most patients pay $0 out of pocket. 94% of patients pay $0 out of pocket. Find your dietitian at usenourish.com. That's usenourish.com.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out, procrastination, putting it off, kicking the can down the road. In, plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out, carpet in the bathroom. Like, why? In, knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
The Score Midday Show, 10 to 2 on 670 The Score.
I don't know. I mean, it's been great ever since I come over here. Right now I don't have anything, so I can't really give you anything. But I mean, it's been great ever since I've been over here. Everyone's been super nice and helpful and everything. And hospitality's been great. And obviously, you guys can walk around this facility. It's really nice. So, I don't know. I'm just here to play some baseball and see what happens after that.
Kyle Tucker is a man about business. That was him talking about not only Vladimir Guerrero's junior extension yesterday before the game, but also what could happen to him. It is a story that we will continue to track, to say the very least. We broadcast live from the Scores Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. And now we go out to the Circa Sports Illinois hotline. Download the Circa app today. That is where we find Sahadev Sharma, one of the beat writers on the Cubs for The Athletic, noted Illini alum. I'm sorry about the Illini team not making it far enough in the tournament. Sahadev, I had them going to the Sweet 16. It is still great to talk to you regardless on the score.
Yeah, that was not a fun Kentucky game, but I should have. I had my hopes up that they'd make a surprise run. It would all coalesce in March. Oh, well. I learned my lesson once again.
Me too. And why? Why did I do that to myself? Why?
We do it every year. We pick a team. We think they're going to do something. And they don't do as much as we think that they're going to do. That's the nature of the game.
It's also an Illini thing. Like, Sahadev gets it.
What? I was with the Illini in Boston. Elite Eight run. That's a nice run.
Well, you got to go back next year.
Maybe I will.
We should talk to you about some baseball, too. The reason we wanted to talk to you isn't just like what we heard, for example, from Kyle Tucker. We will get to that. But also the deep dive that you, Patrick Mooney, and Ken Rosenthal composed that came out on Friday last week about the Cubs spending money. You know, it was based on a graphic that came out on Twitter comparing revenue, which I believe was reported, to what the payroll was and the disconnect there. What were your takeaways in reporting on this story and being able to summarize it in a way that a lot of fans feel like was accurate?
Yeah, I mean, we've been kind of perplexed about this for a little while. That graphic kind of came out at the perfect time because we were hoping to get the story out. I showed Patrick the graphic and I said, this kind of fits perfectly with what we're writing. Let's try and get some reaction to this. Yeah, I mean, that was the simple question, and that's what we kind of wanted to frame. This is the revenue, and this is what is being spent on the player payroll. Why is it like this? you know, you hear different excuses from business people on why this happens. I think ultimately fans don't want to hear the excuses, right? They see that many teams ahead of them on that list, and there's extreme frustration. It doesn't, you know, they are going to be in on Kyle Tucker. Do they ultimately land him? I think the executive that we got talking about that and saying that's kind of the litmus test that they face now, they've been in on players, they haven't signed the big one. What's going to happen with Kyle Tucker? I think that's where the question really gets answered, right? Like the Red Sox were kind of in a similar boat lately, and people were frustrated. Fans were frustrated. They're starting to spend now. They're being aggressive. They're using it. It's mostly extensions. They couldn't land Juan Soto, but they're spending that money. They're up there. You want the Cubs to be up there. They cannot be 12th, 13th, 14th. They can't even be 9th, in my opinion. You need to be in the top 5, top 6 pretty regularly. I understand if you want to make the argument that they're not going to spend like the Mets and the Dodgers, I can understand that. I'll be generous and give you the Yankees, but they need to be up there, and they just haven't been. And this is the perfect time to do it. You're young, you have veterans whose deals are coming up. You're ready to compete. Be aggressive. The business side, has put restrictions in place that kind of keep them from being as aggressive as they probably want to be.
The overarching theme, sort of, is that we're looking at a Cubs team that when you see what other teams are offering some of these guys that you're saying they should probably go after, there is a disconnect there from what the Cubs would like to pay versus what the open market is going to give these guys. You can talk about Alex Bregman. You just mentioned the Red Sox. You can talk about the one-year deal that was talked about with Matt Chapman and what he ended up signing instead. So my thing is, how is that disconnect closed? I mean, is that just a pure ownership has to have some kind of awakening moment in your eyes?
Yeah, I don't know how that changes, right? Like the disconnect, in my opinion, when looking at the front office and what ownership wants to do, they need to pick a lane, right? Right now they're kind of in this middle lane, and it doesn't work the way that the CBA is constructed. If you are going to be this mid-market team or whatever, you don't sign Dansby Swanson. You don't extend Ian Happ. You don't extend Nico Hoerner. Fans don't want to hear that, but I'm just telling you the way front offices think. You don't do these things unless you're going to push in with your salaries, right? With your overall budget. Unless you're going to spend like a top six team at six-ish team, you don't do those moves. Because what do you do with those players? You let young players play at those positions. You trade someone like Ian Happ or Nico Hoerner. You trade these guys. That's what these teams that don't have huge budgets do. And like when you're not competing for the best free agents, when you're not able to extend someone like Kyle Tucker or if you're not going to pay up the big money for Kyle Tucker, you need to do these types of things, right? You don't want them to act like the Milwaukee Brewers and Cleveland Guardians. But if you're not going to give them the huge budget and let them use it as a cudgel against the opposition, then you kind of have to. You have to pick a lane. Otherwise, give them the huge budget. And yes, do they spend more than the NL Central? Yes, they do. But guess what? You have to really use that as a huge advantage. And they have the CBA is built for all these advantages for the small market teams where they get all this money. They get all these draft picks. So many draft picks. There's a reason they can consistently reload their farm systems without having to trade everyone away. Yes, the Cubs need to draft and develop as well as these teams, if not better. They need to do all these things, but they also need to use their financial might or pick a lane. Decide what you're going to be, who you're going to be.
Well, I worry that direction might lead them into the opposite. You know, it might lead them into not paying. I appreciated this quote in particular from your story. They announced what they were going to do when Jed took over, said one executive who was granted anonymity to candidly discuss another club. They were going to take a step back, and they have. There was the assumption that once they got to a particular point, they would start investing very heavily again, and they've probably been a little bit more methodical about it than a lot of people in the industry thought they would. That was diplomatically put, but I think you know the context when you get a quote like that, what that means. Can you help us clarify?
Yeah, I mean, look, they're spending 210-ish million right now on payroll, and that's down from last year in a year that's, you know, win or you lose your job type of situation for this front office. And, it, like, they should be more aggressive. It's what I'm saying. I understand, like, people want to say that, like, they are spending a lot. Yes. Is Tom Ricketts Bob Nutting? Is he... He's not, right? He's not doing that, right? I don't want people to assume, like, there's gray areas here, right? It's not black and white. It's not you're either this or that. He's not Bob Nutting. He's not going home with a bunch of money. He's not taking it all for himself. That's not what's happening here. But he's also not using the Cubs to their full might. Like, I believe them when they say the money that's coming in is going into the team. But there's also other money. You own all this other stuff around the ballpark that's not considered money that you're making for the team, right? Because it's a separate entity. You don't own that stuff without owning the Cubs, right? So, like, you can quote unquote. We don't have the full books here, so I don't know what is creative accounting and what isn't. But you could quote unquote take a loss and be perfectly fine, right? You also have this team that you bought for around $800 million that's worth. What, pushing $5 billion, if not $6 billion now? Yes, I understand that that's not liquid, but you just need to – they're not spending like anyone expected them to at this point. Like, this was supposed to be a reset and then push forward. That's not happening. If your payroll goes down from last year in a must-win season, that's a little mind-boggling. Yeah, and you can't say, like, oh, there are exceptions here and there. It's, oh, we'll sign for Alex Bregman. Well, they did that for last year for Cody Bellinger. There's a reason they had to trade away Cody Bellinger and so they could add other pieces because there are only exceptions for these big name players. That can't be how it's run.
Well, and unfortunately, I think it is. And another piece of this to me is also there's the chance we've talked so much about Jed Hoyer being in his last year of his contract and his job being on the line. But Jed has an excellent resume in baseball. I also think there's equally a chance that he might want to do something else too.
Yeah, you know, he's got a family. He's established himself here. If he's handcuffed and he believes like nothing's going to change, maybe that's true. They need to figure out the business side and baseball ops need to come together and figure out what the plan is exactly. Right. I think that's ultimately what needs to happen. Are they going to be upset if they're not giving out the huge deal to Kyle Tucker? And if they are, if business side is going to be upset about that, then what, like, are you going to give them more leeway on payroll? Because the way this front office looks at it, if you're spending $40 million a year on Kyle Tucker, that's a good investment for about 4 years in their mind. This is how these front offices think, right? Like, the back end of these deals, they have to look at it as a sunk cost. Okay, can we outspend that sunk cost? Can we still spend? Can we have bad money on our books and still be able to compete and spend and go after big time free agents? Because remember, that stopped after they signed Yu Darvish. They won 95 games, and Tom Ricketts says that the team's good enough. We don't need to go after Bryce Harper. That's not what the front office was thinking during that 2018 season, and things changed. Right, finances changed. What they had available to them changed. And that changed the trajectory of the team, frankly. Like, they needed another bat. They weren't able to go get that. So it changes. Signing one player and then saying, you know what, that's enough, it just doesn't work when you're spending that much money. Like, if something goes awry, you're like, suddenly you're handcuffed and you have no ability to go out and make changes and really get players that can kind of change the mix and make things better again.
Bryce Harper, just one of a number of players who would look great in a Cubs uniform if the Cubs ownership and front office were able to go after them and sign them. Talking to Sahadev Sharma, Cubs beat writer at The Athletic and the co-host of the Northside Territory podcast. Let's talk about where we are right now, though, with this team, because We could talk about the big picture stuff all day long, but there's still a season to be played. There's games to be played yesterday, tonight, tomorrow, and, you know, a full 162. And right now the Cubs are doing pretty well. I do like, and when I say like, I'm trying to take the positive out of the negative, because they are down in payroll, you know that they will have an opportunity if they get close to the trade deadline to add bats, arms, whatever. They seem to have that flexibility. Now, what you have to give up to get that stuff, that's another discussion, but it seems like they're very well positioned based on the offense we've seen so far to be in contention, albeit setting themselves up for the National League playoffs.
I agree. I think this team is better than last year on paper, and it's looking like that on the field. We're all kind of remembering what it's like to have this impact, game-changing bat in the lineup. Kyle Tucker doesn't have to be the only person to step up, but I do believe he impacts the lineup in a unique fashion. They have a lot of depth. That remember last year at the beginning, when they went in that slump, they were getting nothing from center field, shortstop and catcher, right? And third base. Well, Dansby Swanson's healthy. Third base is not like a superstar, but Matt Shaw is giving you enough. Miguel Amaya and Carson Kelly are, I mean, Carson Kelly's not going to keep this up, but he's been great to start the season. And Miguel Amaya is putting up just completely different at bats than what he did at the start of last season when he was really slumping. And Pico Armstrong is, you know, I don't think he's getting the results that the quality of the bats suggest. So he's also, when the second he gets on base, it's like just chaos ensues. So they're just getting so much from some of the lesser names, and then you have really quality players around them and a superstar in Kyle Tucker. I love this offense. I really like the way they grind pitchers down. The starters are doing a little bit better than I expected, actually. I was a little concerned about the starters. Matthew Boyd's been amazing. I'm very curious to see how Jameson Taillon does in his next start, because that last start, something clicked, and he looked like a different guy. I talked to him about it. He felt very different out there. If he can keep that going forward, that kind of changes things for the rotation. And like, there's a lot to like about the group. The bullpen is the big question, right? And we're going to be talking about it until I don't know how long we're going to be talking about it. Hopefully it settles down, because you don't want to be talking about these same problems in May and June.
Oh, no, we are. It's going to be like talking about Illini basketball. That's 100%. Like, what the storylines are going to be outside of basketball. It's going to be Cubs bullpen, Kyle Tucker, and whether or not the offense is sustainable. Like, yesterday was a really encouraging thing to see. It wasn't just the Padres series where they could have swept them, arguably. But you know that's what we're going to be following.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. This is the positive for the bullpen. When you have blowouts like yesterday, that saves a bullpen. They were playing so many close games the past two seasons that the bullpen, it was like you couldn't not expose the bullpen. You know what I mean? They had to be exposed. So you hope that they can have some of these blowouts every once in a while, save their bullpen, and then you can kind of lean on your best relievers. And they're starting to emerge, right? Like Porter Hodge gave up a run the other day. Guess what? He's not perfect, but he is showing that he's a really, really good high-leverage reliever. I think Brad Keller is slowly earning himself some trust and becoming, you know, a high-leverage guy. Julian Merriweather, if he's healthy, we know he can be that. Listen, I know Ryan Pressly's scaring fans right now, if not enraging them. I'm shocked by the walks. He's, even when the stuff diminished a bit last year, the walks weren't there. So I'm confused as to what's going on there. If he can settle in with the walks and get rid of those, he can be a good reliever. We'll see if he's still the closer at some point, you know, however long it takes before Craig Counsell decides a move is necessary. But you have three or four good relievers. You feel like you're in a good spot and you can kind of let others settle into their roles. You know, I think Caleb Thielbar is, if he's your main lefty, he just cannot walk guys like he did. You can't, like that Sunday game, Elias Diaz got walked twice, and this is a guy that just doesn't walk, and you're walking your number nine hitter twice. Those are the types of things that drive coaches and managers insane. Like, I remember Tommy Hotovy saying last year, someone asked, I can't remember if it was me or someone else, you know, what are you looking for as far as pitchers go next year? Like, what attributes are you looking for? And the first, without hesitation, strike throwing. And he's not getting that right now. Not from the bullpen. As much as the offense takes walks, the bullpen hands them out. And that among anything else, that has to change.
Well, great stuff as always, Sahadev. We appreciate talking to you and giving a little more insight into that article. If you have not read it, once again, the headline is straightforward on The Athletic, and it asks a question. So the Cubs are one of MLB's top revenue machines, so why aren't they paying for more players? Read it if you've not gotten to yet. It's great. I see it's got a ton of comments as well. Sahadev Sharma, thanks for joining us on The Score.
Thanks, Sahadev.
Of course. Thanks so much for having me. Take care.
Hey, it's me, Paige DeSorbo, and I'm so excited to share my new shoe collection at DSW, filled with my favorite styles and trends for spring. Because if you know me, you know I'm kind of obsessed with shoes. And by kind of obsessed, I mean head over heels. You're going to love these shoes. So snag super cute styles like cute flats, fun heels, and cool sneakers from the Paige DeSorbo collection right now at your DSW store or DSW.com.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Say yes to Pure Leaf tea and free gas for a year only at True North Convenience Stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. That's why Dollar Shave Club makes the razors, but you make the rules. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Dollar Shave Club products are now available everywhere. Or visit their site right now for 20% off $20 or more and get your products delivered right to your door. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/shaveup and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more. And remember, whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
Hi, this is Javon, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow, a real person.
Yep, I'm here to help with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
We can also send you samples fast and free.
Wow. I mean, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule. And there's no haggling, pressure, or hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over, and I'm thinking of something.
Blinds.com has covered over 25 million windows, all backed by a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com now and save up to 40% site-wide. Rules and restrictions may apply.
All right, so these two have never met before, and now they're getting texts because look what they were up to. They knew they were on TV, and come over here.
Yeah, they're kind of going Lady and the Tramp on
yeah,
the hot dog.
Yeah, that's right. And then they find out that everybody's seen them on TV, and we're so funny, we're so clever. Hey, we're blowing up. Are they done with the hot dogs yet? You're stars. We love you.
There is a looseness about Boog this year and JD.
Oh, you mean Wildfire? My guy Wildfire?
Why is he Wildfire?
So they were talking about some old player was nicknamed Wildfire.
Oh.
And Boog's like, would you please call me Wildfire? And they just kept going. He's like, JD, if you call me Wildfire for every game between now and August, would it catch on?
By the way, breaking news on the Score is brought to you by Wildfire. Oh, I didn't know if maybe Boog had gotten a deal in place. Join Wildfire Restaurants as they celebrate 30 years of serving delicious food and creating memories.
Oh, man. But it's... They're having fun. They are really, really enjoying themselves, and Boog was really leaning into the hot dog couple, Lawrence.
So do we have the couple or do we only have Tristan?
We have the couple.
Okay.
But ask them if they're a couple.
Right. Like, okay. Hi guys, you're on the Score.
Hi.
Howdy.
What are your names?
So I am Tristan, the woman in the video.
And I'm Robbie.
Tristan and Robbie.
And Robbie.
So you guys don't know each other at all?
No.
No. I'd had three hot dogs. She told me she had four. And I was like, you know what? I can't eat another one. I could probably split one, though.
That's awesome, you guys bonding over dogs at the game.
Do you actually know each other? Was that a bit from Boog? Like, are you a couple? We all kind of basically assumed that you guys were in love, and this is just something you do from time to time.
No, I had saved the world today. You can't see two strangers sharing a dog like Lady and the Tramp and assume that they're just not really good friends.
Yeah, I actually didn't know that this was going to go viral, so my boyfriend at home is going to be pretty upset about it.
Yeah.
I can imagine that would be the case, Tristan.
Yeah. Your faces were awfully close together. We didn't see it complete. Did you guys meet in the middle of the dog?
No, we kind of both gave up and then switched to popcorn.
Did you do it with the popcorn, too? Did we miss that?
You did miss us throwing the popcorn to each other.
Oh, so you did the whole thing where you're trying to catch the popcorn in your mouth type deal?
Yeah, have you ever been to Kobe?
Okay.
All right, so wait a minute. You guys are coworkers? Is that the situation here?
I'm not sure. I just met her today.
We found out we're both lawyers, so in a way, we're coworkers.
Counselor.
Okay. And you've bonded and flirted over the hot dog, and there are significant others who are not going to be pleased at this moment.
So
we both abhor food waste, and I was like, you know, I've already had three hot dogs, she's already had four, like, it'd be a shame to waste the fifth one. So we're like, you know, we might as well just split it.
Robbie's got a date later this week. I've got a long-standing boyfriend. It was just a friendly hot dog split.
In a friendly confines.
So, counselor, what is your strategy in how you're going to explain this to the boyfriend?
That's a good question.
Well, the boyfriend was upset when I got last-minute tickets to the game. So he's already on the mend from this. So unless someone sends in the MLB Instagram post of me, Lady and the Tramping the Hot Dog, I don't know if we're ever going to mention this.
It's going to be mentioned, counselor.
You can't have secrets like this. This is, you got to lead with that. You got to go home
and say, hey, guess what happened at the game today?
Yes, babe. I want you to hear it from me before you see it in your Instagram feed.
And if anybody asks, my name is Abe Froman.
The Sausage King of Chicago, yes.
That's well played. That's well played. All right, well, this is your moment. I mean, yeah, you need to call Vienna Beef. You need to call any hot dog-related business and see if you could maximize this and do a commercial immediately.
Oh, we are Vienna Beef through and through. There is no better hot dog in the confines of the city.
You know, my thing is, like, I love that St. Patrick's Day has the parade queen. I am actually ready to run for the title of Sausage King of Chicago.
Robbie's got some game here. He's got some comedic chops, I think. You know? I would vote for Robbie for Sausage King. So far.
I'm going to hold you to that. That's a stunning endorsement.
I didn't know that there was an election. Is there like a pageant? Or?
Our next call is Vienna Beef.
It's actually a pretty good idea. I mean, you guys...
Lawrence, I bet they're going to get married.
I'm going to claim it now and then defend my crown next year.
I'm predicting it now. They're going to get married.
Speaks, why? She has a man. Why are you trying to break up a happy home?
This is just, this is such a good meet cute, right? This is like such a good meet cute for a rom-com.
So to speak. Get it?
An M-E-A-T-Q. That's exactly right. All right. Thank you, Tristan. Thank you, Robbie.
Good luck, counselors.
Yep.
Thank you.
A-Proman.
Yeah. My God. There they were. The viral heroes. Well, Cubs lost to Texas.
Gonna be a hero afternoon. Hero for another hour.
Right? Hell is coming to breakfast. Yeah, hell is coming to breakfast when she gets home. Or coming to the seventh inning. Hell is coming to an afternoon hot dog snack.
Yep.
That is, you know, I mean, that's like it.
You guys shouldn't get in trouble in Cook County anytime soon. Might be a bad day for you.
You ever been with somebody who said, like, oh, yeah, that's my husband. And then this guy here, he's my work husband, or he's my work wife. Yeah, right. Exactly.
Hey.
That's exactly right. I had that one time.
You did?
Didn't end well.
How'd it go?
Not good. Thank you. Not good at all, as a matter of fact.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Want to travel like a savvy jet setter? No, that doesn't mean monogramming your passport. It means making smart decisions every step of your trip, which means knowing your options. Smart Travel unpacks the facts, like which booking sites actually save money, how to fly first class using points, and if that fancy travel card is a smart investment, all so you can save more on your next adventure. Follow Smart Travel from NerdWallet today and start traveling like a pro.
Hey everyone, quick shout out to Whole Foods Market. You know I'm all about eating fresh and finding quality ingredients, and that's exactly what Whole Foods delivers. Whether you're grabbing organic produce, high quality meats, or just a quick healthy snack, they've got you covered. Plus, they're all about sustainability and supporting local farmers, which I love. Next time you're grocery shopping, check them out. You'll taste the difference. Spring is the perfect time to refresh your table, and Whole Foods Market has everything you need. Hosting brunch? Picture this. Flaky, buttery quiche, crispy bacon, fresh berries, and of course, cold-pressed orange juice to brighten up your morning. And if you're in the mood for something fizzy, check out their seasonal Italian sodas. Berry Blend and Orange Hibiscus are total must-tries. So whether you're planning a casual get-together or a full-on feast, Whole Foods Market has you covered. Make Whole Foods Market your destination for all spring gatherings.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps. Restrictions apply.
Street Easy knows former New Yorkers never stop talking about how much they miss living in NYC.
Life used to feel like a movie, but since we left and bought a house, it's like living in a DIY home repair video.
When it's time to buy, let Street Easy connect you with the right agent you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
The obsessive killing of Dorothy Stratton, the real-life murder that inspired Twin Peaks. These stories and more are told in the Hollywoodland podcast, where true crime and Tinseltown collide. Follow and listen to Hollywoodland wherever you get your podcasts.
The Score Midday Show, 10-2 on 670 The Score.
2-2 with two outs here in the ninth. 7-0 Cubs. Here comes. Popped up. And this should do it. Workman in on the grass. Ball game. Cubs win. Justin Steele outstanding. And the Cubs do a little bit of everything offensively. Sing the song.
See, I stayed up late for my dad out of night. Might be a little delirious. Nope, that's it. He's got his dinosaur, so he's roaring.
That was John Buscemi and Jim DeShays on Marquee Sports Network, and then a special guest star appearance in the post-game press conference of Bo Steele in his appropriate sound effect, Dinosaur. I feel like he could be on the Score Midday Show with that. We love a good sound effect.
I do love a sound effect. I do love little people in general. I like anything that brings people joy. And you know what brought a lot of people joy last night in this city? Not the weather, but what happened in the weather. 34 degrees, tied for the fourth coldest first pitch in Cubs history.
The first pitch temperature was colder than the Winter Classic starting temperature at Wrigley.
And so it's appropriate then with a 34 degree first temperature that they played a brutal football game that ended in a 7-0 shutout.
Yeah,
one touchdown. That's all it was scored.
That's how it felt. Yeah, Cubs beat the Rangers 7-0, and Justin Steele did have an absolutely fabulous night against a talented Rangers team. As we talked to Evan Grant, the Dallas Morning News writer, about it yesterday on The Score, Steele was dominating. 7 innings, only 3 hits, 2 walks, and 8 strikeouts. And if you had any, indication of just what Justin Steele needed to do after giving up 5 home runs on the season already in his starts before, that was an absolutely fabulous game for him. Just, you could tell he was in a rhythm. That game was absolutely flying pace-wise. And 2 innings of solid work, too, for Colin Ray to clean that up. You know, just come in after the 7 from Steele. You only use 2 pitchers on the day, and you get it done. Thusly, the Rangers only used 2 pitchers, but they were able to touch Nathan Eovaldi pretty good. The Cubs were able to score in 1, 2, 3, 4 innings, and that's how you get it done. 4 runs, 6th, and there it is.
I was going to say, I know the part you liked, not the fact that they had 3 runs through the 5th inning, but then they were like, hey, by the way, we can score late too, and they scored in the back half with the 4 runs in the 6th, putting this thing away.
Right, and you saw there were good decisions made as far as who was playing in the game. That wind chill was 18 on the north side. John Birdie, again, with productive base running. You know, the Cubs were really aggressive on the base pass yesterday. I think that's something I want to talk to Ian Happ about at 11:25, because you really saw how productive it ended up being. And because they're deeper in the lineup, because you're seeing more hits or productive outs, because you're seeing them get on base more, even though they only had 3 walks in this one, but that's all right. It was a 7-0 win. You're just seeing productive outs as well. Dansby Swanson with the sacrifice, you know, that gets credited later in the game. But point being, outs can also be productive for this team, and you're seeing that take shape in ways that are encouraging.
I think one of my bigger takeaways from this game, the Cubs now, they're 6-1 in their last 7 games, right? And they've been doing well. We've talked a lot, not quite ad nauseum, but we've talked appropriately a lot about the bullpen and their shortcomings in games in which it's required. But it's also good when you have games where the bullpen isn't required to do a whole lot, and there are no high-leverage situations, because guess what? The game is out of hand. And so if you look back over their last 9 games, the Cubs starting pitchers have a combined 2.67 ERA. That means 16 earned runs over 54 innings, right? That means on average, in those 9 games, they're going 6 innings. That's good. That means one thing I can be certain of if this continues is we won't have some of the breakdowns we've seen in years past with the Cubs bullpen in the back half of the season, because you're not pitching guys back-to-back days for the most part. You're not using guys 4 and 5 times a week. It's more of a, hey, we're going to use you 2 to 3 times a week, and that's how you keep your bullpen fresh. And that's so important in the early part of the season. Not that I wouldn't like to see them do well when they do have the high leverage situations. That expectation still exists. But hey, the Rangers came in red hot, and the Cubs summarily put them down. 7-0? It was the most complete performance we've seen all year, and they also showed you they have a variety of ways they can beat you offensively. It doesn't have to be big ball, 3-run home run. We just get hits and guys move around the bases.
No, that's the point. And that's why I'm such a believer in manufacturing offense. When you saw guys go to first and then immediately they're trying to steal second. The encouraging of the base running is, and I'm saying encouraging the base runners themselves, has been a real bright spot so far as you see them try to do it. They must have had something on Eovaldi too, to be able to be so aggressive about it at times. And then able to do so with their reliever as well. But that was productive. It changes the face of the inning. You know, we also saw just some hard contact, even when there weren't home runs. You knew the weather was going to battle you. Say a Suzuki walks, which I think because he's swinging the bat more, he is then therefore a threat. So he's going to increase his walk number, but then he steals second base. You know, so you're seeing that be productive. The runners get in scoring position easier. And then what happens is when you have that deep lineup, the next guy who's a threat to hit, it becomes a different story for the pitcher opposing him. Michael Busch enjoyed that yesterday. It was just a really nice win all the way around.
Looking at some bigger picture things, you saw the 5 stolen bases. You talked about them being able to be aggressive on the base pass. One reason why is there's only one team that has fewer caught stealings than the Cubs. That would be the Red Sox. They've stolen 15 bases. They've been caught no times. But the Cubs, they've stolen 21 bases. They've been caught stealing one time all season. That is productive. That is efficient. That is optimal.
I also know that we wanted to get to the Kyle Tucker comments. Didn't he talk for like a whopping 20 seconds about this? Like, even now, we probably still have time to play his comments about being asked about what he's going to be asked about all season.
How do you, you know, look at that and, you know, continue to go about your business and let your agents and everyone else take care of the business side?
I don't know. I mean, it was what he wanted to do. I'm sure he loves playing in Toronto and everything. So, you know, that's great for him. But, I mean, everyone's a little different. I mean, right now I'm here to, you know, play this year and play for the Cubs. So I'm excited to get out there and play again tonight and just kind of see where everything goes after that.
Vlad Jr. supposedly had a deadline that they had some blue pass. Have you given your agency or the front office any sort of instructions or communications in terms of how you want this year?
I mean, I haven't thought about it like that much. I mean, I'm just trying to come out here and play and put up wins and, you know, get my numbers and whatever. But I mean, I'm just here to play baseball. So I just let the other stuff kind of fall where it is and see what happens.
Now, he was asked that on the heels of course, Vlad Guerrero Jr.'s extension we discussed yesterday. But that doesn't sound like a guy who thinks he's going to get paid here.
He's just here to get his numbers and get his money, Layla, wherever that may be. I don't have a problem with how he answered the question because he's obviously trying to help the Cubs win. He's obviously focused on putting up big numbers so he can get big numbers in his bank account. I think Kyle Tucker's answer, that's fine. It's ho-hum. I don't know what people wanted him to say in that spot.
Yeah, I mean, honest, and he's being honest.
It's a no-win situation because if you start talking about the contract talks, then it becomes a thing. I think he was dismissing it as, hey, Vladdy got his. He obviously wanted to stay in Toronto. That's where he's played his entire career. I'm not in the same situation. He said, quote, everyone's different, end quote. People read too much into that. I just read into that. I'm here. I'm playing. We're winning. Let's keep doing that. And I know I'm going to get paid at the end of the season.
Kyra, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, fellas. How are you guys doing?
Doing well.
We're holding up. I'm curious. Yesterday, you know, listen, the weather's been awful. And you guys have been winning series. And that's really all anyone is after. But I don't know if it was the combination of Shota just not being Shota, having a rough go, which, again, probably weather-related. But I think that Justin Steele news kind of took everyone for a little bit of a by surprise. Was this a pre-existing thing, or did he just come out of that start with a sore elbow?
I mean, kind of both. You know, obviously, it's the same injury as last year, something that's been nagging him. So, you know, that happens with players, you know, where there's something that, you know, kind of pops up here and there, you know, throughout their careers. And Justin's no exception there. And, you know, this one popped up. It's not something that had been hurting him in spring training. You know, he'd been in a really good place. And, you know, we're hopeful that we caught it early and that we'll be able to get him back here soon. And, you know, that's why we're taking a conservative route here.
What is the level of concern, and is Jordan Wicks part of the plan to perhaps replace him for a start here or there?
Yeah, I mean, there's always concern when you're dealing with injuries with any player, especially somebody as talented as Justin. But, you know, right now, all we got to do is figure out exactly what's going on in there and then, you know, adjust as necessary. But, you know, this is something that almost every team is dealing with. And, you know, we certainly, you know, built up our starting pitching depth to be able to withstand things like this. And, you got guys like Wicks, Colin Ray. Obviously, Javi Assad is going to be coming off the IL here, you know, not imminently, but, you know, soon, hopefully this month. And, you know, then you got other guys in the minor leagues, your Cade Hortons of the world. And then,
right.
you know, there's somebody that no one's thinking about that's going to be helping us out over the course of this year. So I think the answer is all of those guys are going to be part of the answer. And, you know, with winning teams that go long into the season and into the off season, they have to have a lot of answers.
Obviously, an off day today. You guys traveling to California, and we know that that Justin wasn't scheduled to pitch until Sunday. Is there any chance that J-Mo could go? Because I think you're off next Thursday too. Do you not want to load up anybody early, or is there an opportunity to maybe take advantage of a couple of off days and try to get by without kind of starting someone unexpected?
Yeah, you certainly don't want to throw guys off of their routines if that's not something that you have to do. You know, I think an interesting byproduct of the Japan series, if you look at our early schedule, there's a lot of off days, especially on Thursdays. It almost looks like a minor league schedule or the new minor league schedule, which is nice. You know, that allows us to have some flexibility in how we go about maneuvering our pitching and our roster. And, you know, from that perspective, you know, we're glad that the schedule laid out this way, and we'll use that to our advantage as best as we can.
So let's talk about Matt Shaw for a moment, because I think there's a lot of focus on and hope that he is going to be the guy that is the everyday third baseman this season. He's not great at the plate so far, hitting just 170, but he is getting on base because he's walked 10 times. How do you balance one against the other, Carter? And what are reasonable expectations for Matt Shaw? And also, how much patience is the front office and maybe Craig Counsell going to have?
Yeah, I mean, I think from a broad scope, we're trying to win baseball games, and so we're going to try to make decisions to put our best team out there. But what Matt's done really well is he's played great defense, and I think there's a lot of encouraging signs at the plate. And I think you mentioned the plate discipline. That's certainly been good, his ability to get on base. You know, and I think he's taking better swings, you know, over the last week. And you know, he's seen some really good arms and some really not great hitter-friendly weather. And, you know, hopefully over the course of, you know, the next weeks and months, that he'll be able to slow things down a little bit and get back to his natural talent. And I expect that'll happen. But I think you look at all the young players around the league and just the adjustment it is to go up to the big league so quickly, it's really, really difficult. And you know, I think the fact that we're seeing some progress here is encouraging, and we'll continue to play that out.
You know, it isn't. You're right about the weather and everything going on early in the season, but man, you guys have been killing the ball. It's been kind of fun to see you. I think it's 8 of the last 10 games or 9 7-run games, something crazy like that. You've been really able to put up some runs. You just needed the 7 yesterday and everything would have been fine. But what's it like seeing that and knowing? I mean, you know, we talked about it during spring training, how you know, everybody wants everyone to be hitting, and it doesn't matter till the season starts. Well, everybody's doing a pretty good job of hitting.
Yeah, it's been really encouraging early, you know, and I think we've all realized that, you know, sometimes these things can be feast or famine, and so really the only thing you can do is focus on the next game and making sure you try to just continue to have your best approach for the next game. And I think that's what guys have been doing, you know, and then when we've had a tough game, we've come back and played well the next one. And I think that's just all you really can focus on and just long of a marathon of a season like this is. But yeah, to your point, it's been really encouraging. The ability to take walks, the ability to hit with runners in scoring position, the ability to drive the ball, it's all been going really well. And that means a lot of runs, and that typically leads to a lot of wins.
This is Mully and Haw. We're talking with Cubs general manager Carter Hawkins, who's appearing on behalf of Paws Chicago, whose mission is to build no-kill communities, to end overpopulation of homeless animals, and to transform animal welfare. One of those guys hitting the cover off the ball is Kyle Tucker. And certainly, Carter, you know how it goes when you have a guy entering the final year of his contract. The conversation has already begun about what he is worth and can he stay forever? Because that's what we want him to stay forever. What is the Cubs policy? What is the approach with Kyle Tucker? Are you open for contract negotiations during the season? Is that something that's up to the player? Or what is your stance when we talk about the contract future for Kyle Tucker?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'll repeat a lot of the stuff Jed said. You know, we'll keep those conversations internal, whether they're happening or whether they're not happening. But I'll also repeat what Jed said, and that, you know, he's a player you want to build, you know, build around, and he's absolutely an elite hitter in this league and played a great defense as well. And he's carried our lineup, you know, along with our catchers over the last couple of weeks. And, you know, we'll expect to see that continue through the season, and, you know, just thrilled that we have him on this club.
Crazy lot of money floating around, and we just saw another contract extension in Toronto and another big deal. And, you know, you keep wondering, like, how big are these contracts getting? Do you have to move quicker because the more you wait, the bigger the contract? Like, how do you judge that? How do you balance the kind of price of playing poker going up so exorbitantly?
Yeah, I mean, generally, you know, you're trying to judge markets. You're trying to understand, you know, are there certain positions, certain players that are overvalued or undervalued, and, you know, allocate your dollars appropriately, you know, within those contexts. But, you know, it's hard to judge markets. You know, the guys that are doing it on Wall Street, you know, are having a really hard time right now, and it's not too much easier over here in baseball either. So, yeah, I mean, those are conversations that we're constantly having, you know, during the off season, during the season, you know, trying to understand where there might be some inefficiencies. And, you know, we're just trying to make sure that, you know, when we're spending money, that money is going towards wins, and that money is going towards wins in an efficient fashion. And there's a lot underneath that sentence, but that's really the goal.
So you have access to all the information, all the camera angles, all the stuff. You also have access to the players and what they're thinking and how they're feeling and what they might be dealing with that we're not aware of. Help us understand Ryan Pressly and the start that he's off to, because the numbers say that, you know what, it's acceptable, it's fine, and he's going to get better. There have been some shaky moments. There's no doubt about it. You can't get around it. He's here to close games. He's here to pitch the ninth inning. How would you describe the start he's off to, and is there anything that you see that can be or will be corrected?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you're talking about guys that are throwing the ninth, obviously there's a magnifying glass on that. And so they get talked about more, which, you know, is understandable, and that kind of comes with the territory with that. You know, I think the stuff has actually been pretty good relative to where he's been over time. And that part's encouraging to know that, hey, look, it's still in there. I think really for him, it's, you know, he's going to have some contact. He's going to have some balls put on the ground, and, you know, some of those balls are going to get through. I think for him, it's about ability to command and ability to get ahead, ability not to walk a guy and then have a hit on top of that is when really traffic starts happening. And that's really where it gets, you know, a little bit tight in the ninth inning, of course. So, you know, we're encouraged that the stuff is still there. You know, we're going to continue to try to work on helping to have him be able to land that stuff in an effective way as possible, and, you know, encouraged about his ability to help us out at the back end of games, and, you know that there's a lot of other guys that are supporting him as well. You know, I thought Porter Hodge was really, really good the other night, despite a couple of hits that just happened to be hitting to the corners, and same thing with Julian Merriweather. You're seeing Brad Keller, you know, start to establish himself as someone that potentially could help us out at the end of the games, and from that perspective, we'll just continue to try to put our best guys out there so that we can win as many games as we can.
Carter, we had a fun conversation with Tommy Hotovy recently where we were asking him his thoughts on the torpedo bats. You know, it just became this like rage and bait. Oh, look at the torpedo bat. And he kind of laughed and said that with all the different pitches that are, you know, we're changing the names of some pitches we're familiar with, but there seems like every time you turn around, the pitching people are really coming up with something crazy and cool, and they're moving the ball and everything else. And he kind of joked that it's high time the hitters kind of responded. And what's your take on that torpedo bat stuff?
Yeah, I mean, so it's something that we've been working on for a long time, you know, maybe 2 years, and really hadn't been talking about it with anyone, obviously,
right?
Because we wanted to try to keep it to ourselves. And I think there was some kind of convergent evolution happening where some other teams were coming to some of the same conclusions. The funny part on the name piece, and I was laughing about this with our guys, is we had named ours a reverse taper bat, which, like, in retrospect is just not the best marketing play.
Reverse taper? Did you say reverse taper
bat? That's what he said. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, exactly.
Rolls
yeah,
right off the tongue. The paper.
And then somebody started talking about torpedoes. I'm like, oh, man, yeah, we should have gone with torpedo. So the fact that we didn't hit five home runs in our, you know, in our first game, I think, and no one noticed it, and the fact that we called it reverse taper probably was why a lot of those articles were written about us. But You know, look, like, this is such a fun game where you're always trying to find, you know, just 1% advantages. And, you know, I think these reverse taper bats or torpedo bats or bowling pin bats or whatever you want to call it is an opportunity to find some of that advantage. And, you know, we have some really, really smart people in our organization that work on things like that all the time. And, you know, just glad to see that, you know, yeah, the hitting side is finally punching back a little bit here in terms of innovation. And, you know, I expect that will continue to happen.
Well, I think one guy who's benefiting from whatever you want to call it, but Dansby Swanson has 4 home runs already and looks like he's got more power at the plate, Carter. And I just wonder, he also looks as fluid as ever in the field. The offseason core surgery, or however you want to describe that, how much difference did that make in allowing him to maybe be the player earlier this season than we have seen before? Because you look at him and he looks more dangerous at the plate. And I just wonder what effect that offseason surgery had.
Yeah, I don't want to speak for Danby, and, you know, certainly, you know, couldn't give you a specific number as to what, you know, what is driving, you know, him just looking a little bit better on the field over the course of this year. Obviously, he played great defense last year and actually put up a solid offensive season. But to your point, he's been really good, you know, this year thus far. And I have to imagine for him, just not having to play through pain every day, definitely just eases his mind and allows him to be the best version of himself.
Carter, he seemed to be tapering off last year. Now there's a reverse taper.
Exactly. see, not actually.
Now we can market it. Now we got a chance.
Yeah.
How many people experiment with it? I read somewhere that Bellinger was using it last year, and then obviously the Yankees are using it. How many people have been? I mean, do we expect to see more of it, or is it just kind of depend on the person, how comfortable they are with it?
Yeah, I would expect that we'll see more of it. I mean, it's kind of like all of us 20 years ago when, you know, you had that buddy that was like, hey, I got this thing called a Big Bertha, and it's like, it helps me hit it a little bit further. And you're like, ah, I like mine. It feels good. Like, I'm going to hit mine for a while. Then over time, you're like, ah, crap, like this guy's hitting it 20 yards farther than me every time. I think that'll happen over time as guys get used to it and it just becomes more prevalent throughout the league. So that'd be my expectation. My expectations aren't always right, but I imagine it'll go that direction.
Carter, let's talk about Michael Busch for a second, because on one hand, I see a guy who is an ascending player. First base, his defense has gotten really good. He's the cleanup hitter. And I don't know if we look at the way we look at cleanup hitters the way we used to look at cleanup hitters, because if we did that, I don't think that the cleanup hitter 20 years ago, 10 years ago, might have been pinch hit for in the fifth inning because of a matchup on the mound. Michael Busch has been a guy that I think, you know, has run into that a couple times this season already. How valuable is he to this team? Do you understand kind of like maybe sometimes the confusion we see from the outside when the guy is pinch hit for, if he's batting cleanup, and you think, how could you do that in that spot? I guess, what is the overall philosophy when that happens, and how much do you value his offensive abilities?
Yeah, I mean, kind of a two-part answer here. I think one, focusing on Michael Busch, you know, he is extremely valuable, right? You talked about his defense already. You know, he's had just consistent at bats. You know, he's been able to drive the baseball. You know, he is, you know, an above average first baseman for us. And from that perspective, you know, to have him under control for as long as we do, we are thrilled to have him. So I think that's, you know, park Michael Busch for a second. I think the second question you're asking is, okay, like with traditional lineup spots, like in doing untraditional things with those lineup spots, like why would you do something like that? And the short answer is, you know, you feel like that's going to help you win the game more effectively. So if, you know, we feel like Justin Turner is going to hit a left-handed pitcher, or someone else is going to hit a left-handed pitcher, a specific left-handed pitcher, better than a specific left-handed hitter, and we're in a high-leverage situation like that, we're going to make that move. So the decision there is, you know, hey, in this particular situation, this player is better, this other player is better. But in general, you know, we feel like the other guy is really, really, really good. So, yeah, I think it's different, right? And I think I can understand why, you know, someone would say, hey, why would that be happening if that guy's a cleanup hitter? But the short answer is, in this specific example or this specific situation, this is the best way for us to try to win this baseball game, and that's why we do it.
You know, all the talk is, as David mentioned, about Kyle Tucker, King Tuck, what he can do. I've really enjoyed seeing Matthew Boyd. I've really enjoyed Carson Kelly. It feels like some of the guys you added have maybe exceeded my expectations. Probably not
John
yours.
Birdie?
Yeah, John Birdie, fast.
Yeah, I mean, obviously we like those guys, or else we wouldn't have given them so much money. But from that perspective, yeah, we're encouraged by their starts. They've fit seamlessly into the clubhouse, and to your point, have really really done well early in the year. And look, it's extremely early, and we have a long way to go. But the way those guys go about their business, the way they prepare for each game, my expectations is that we'll be in a really good place with them going forward, and excited that we have them.
It is extremely early, but heading into yesterday's game, I believe the Cubs led the majors in runs scored, stolen bases, and walks. So from your perspective, when you look at this team offensively, what is its strength?
Yeah, I think you kind of hit the nail on the head, right? Like, we're looking to score runs. How are we going to do that better than other teams? Well, probably not going to hit more home runs than other teams, or than all of the teams. We'll be up there. We got some guys that can really drive the baseball, but got a lot of fast guys, a lot of smart guys, a lot of intelligent guys that are really going to play every game 100%. You've seen all those plays we've had early where, runner on first and he beats out a forced play at second. That extends an inning. That gives us an opportunity to score more runs. You've seen us steal bases. You've seen us take extra bases. I think that aggression, that pressure definitely allows us to create more runs either through getting more outs or just, being able to advance guys. And I think you've seen our ability to really put pressure on the pitcher by making him come into the zone, by taking balls that are, an inch or 2 inches off the plate. You watch some of the teams have been really, really good over the last several years, and their hitters are able to do that. We'll play a Dodgers team this weekend. Their hitters are really good at doing that. They make you come into the zone. And if you can be patient and make pitchers make mistakes, you got an opportunity to capitalize on them. So, yeah, I think it's those things, and, encouraged about the early results so far.
I always wonder when I see a guy who hits rather unconventionally, like Matthew Shaw's stance, is that more difficult for a hitting coach to work with a guy? Does that take extra work? Does that take extra kind of, it's just such an odd stance. We've certainly seen other guys with that kind of stance, but I just wonder what, is that a hitting coach's nightmare?
I don't know, nightmare. Probably enjoy it for sure in terms of just, having something else to think about. The thing about hitters is they all get back to similar positions after their load, right? So right. The stance is kind of a comfort position to where they start. I mean, think about Craig Counsell, right? Like where he started. Like his position, if you freeze framed it as the pitch is starting to be released from the pitcher, is going to look very similar to all other hitters. And so the path to get to that, that convergent position for all hitters is a little bit more difficult if you have a little bit more unorthodox stance, but it's still the same thing. So I think for a hitting coach and for that hitter, it's just, okay, how are you going to get from this place of comfort to this next place of success that looks like what all successful hitters do? And yeah, that's a little bit more difficult, but it's offset by the comfort that it gives the hitter.
All right, Carter. So earlier you referenced Big Bertha. We are distracted in the studio here because we're watching the Masters. Is there a Masters pool in the Cubs front office? And do you have a prediction for who's going to win this weekend?
If there's a Masters pool, I was left out of it. I probably had my head in the computer a little bit too much over the last couple of weeks to know what's going on there. But in terms of who is going to win, the chatter down in the clubhouse was that Rory hasn't looked as good as he looked unbelievable relative to how he's typically gone into the Masters. So I'm going to give him that one. And if we win that one, I wish I would have been in the pool.
Great stuff. Carter, thanks a ton. Great catching up. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Carter.
Yeah, likewise, fellas. Take care.
That's a lot of fun. That's Carter Hawkins.
Spiegel and Holmes, afternoons on the Score.
Your guys' show starting is the beginning of a new era.
So glad you guys are able to team up together for the afternoon show.
All right, well, we navigated that pretty well. I was worried. I'm always worried. Yeah, that's my bit.
My bit is good vibes.
I think those are good vibes, babe.
Who would dare interrupt me during my midday bath? Yeah. Oh!
The Spiegel and Holmes Show.
I might swerve in that corner.
Whoa, 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 whoa.
See Matt Spiegel over there.
We love Coach Spiegs.
Are you noticing that?
Well, I will tell you, Spiegs, if you've noticed it, I've noticed it.
Lawrence Holmes, put a star on it.
I have the driver in my bag. Today's a day for the driver.
Now watch this drive. Nice one, Lawrence.
How will we handle?
Greg Council joining us.
All right, that was fun.
Nico Horner.
It's good to be back. It's been a while.
Yeah, it has.
Miss your voice.
Oh, that's nice.
See,
you were supposed to follow that up with
Mr. Musk.
Picked off by Jalen Johnson. Touchdown.
Jalen, this is Lawrence Holmes. Jalen, are you muted?
He's muted.
Bringing your rookiness to me.
That's on me, man. That's on me.
Forget about it, cut.
Bob Costas.
Matt, thank you very much. And Lawrence, stop dominating the conversation the way you have over the last several minutes, really.
Joe Buck.
This is a one-way relationship. I don't think I've ever asked anything about. I think the last time I was in this imbalanced of a relationship,
yeah.
I married her.
Hey, man.
I don't care who they put on. Joe Buck's on, I turn the sound down.
Holy Chicago.
Everything's fine. Everything's fine. Lawrence, everything's fine. Matt, everything's fine. Shane, Tanny, everything's fine.
It's like doing radio, right? You're only as good as your teammates. So, you know, Tanny comes in and he's a magician with his sound. And then you guys come on and Shane books us and your guys' team is great there. That's why your show is good. Football's like that, too. You can't be good by yourself.
I mean, goosebumps. Hell? Let's kick off this show with a bang.
I mean, let's go.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. It is the Spiegel and Holmes Show. We got you until 6 o'clock. Tanny is here. Shane is here. That man is Matt Spiegel.
Hello.
And I'm Lawrence Holmes. We got you until 6 o'clock. The Cubs lose what was a really weird game that they played. They got dominated from a hitting standpoint, and it felt like the game was within their reach of, like, grabbing it, taking hold of it, and then the fifth inning happened.
Yeah, fifth inning was ugly, that's for sure. But it was weird. It was one of those days where Shota Imanaga gave up a bunch of hard contact and a lot of fly balls, and a few of them left the yard. He's been, you know, it's funny. We talked about it yesterday with Matthew Boyd in that interview yesterday about how Imanaga and Boyd are both like fly ball pitchers, and Wrigley actually has been playing pretty well for fly ball pitchers. Not so much for Shota today. And like, I mean, Corey Seager and Marcus Semien have been awful to start the year. Corey Seager woke up today. He's just way too good to have been as bad as he has been. So that dude can rake, and today he began doing it again.
When I'm watching the at-bat with Jonah Heim, I'm sitting there like just in my chair at the crib and just being like, Shota. After he fouls that ball off, I'm like, Shota, don't go back in there. Like I'm like someone at a scary movie. Don't go in there. And he went back in there, and Jonah Heim was like, "Watch this."
Yeah, he's like been one of the only Rangers who's been hitting. Their offense has been brutal, but so he kept going, and then you get Seager, and they got Josh Jung back. He hit a bullet to center field today. He just came back last night. That's a good team. Those are two good teams. I went over there, Lawrence, had to go over and meet somebody, so I ended up doing Clubhouse and hanging out over there, and the buzz, it was a weird day, because the main thing was, everybody, are we going to play? Are they going to play today? Are we going to play today?
Yeah, the weather forecast was all jacked up, and it looked like we were planning for like a full show today.
Either a full show or no show, because it was going to be like, either they cancel the game, or they start it and just do whatever they have to do to get it in because it's the last trip in for Texas, you know? So, like, everybody at the ballpark is like, are they playing? What do you think? Are they playing? I don't know.
Well, it was snowing in Hyde Park this morning, and I'm like, huh. But I was talking to Porth, and he's like, well, downtown everything's fine. I'm like, you know, we get a little bit of that in Hyde Park where occasionally that's where the weather line ends up breaking. But once they got go, I was like, you had said it and someone else had said it looks like they're getting ready to play. I was like, they're playing. And they, credit to baseball operations of the Cubs, because these were 3 days where you could very easily and justifiably be like, nah, let's not do it. Let's not go out there on the night when there's 40 mile per hour wind gust and it feels like 20 degrees, or let's not play in the cold. Or, hey, there's a forecast that there's going to be hail and snow and all that stuff. We could just bang the game and get on to Los Angeles and send Texas on their way. But no, they got through it, and that means that your organization was on top of what it really was like outside.
There is some concern that the cold weather may have contributed to the injury to one of your best pitchers, one of your most important pitchers. That was the other buzz around the ballpark today, was that I wonder how much the cold and going seven innings in the cold the other night led to Justin Steele's issue.
So why don't we hear from Cubs manager Craig Counsell on that specifically?
I think the cold, you know, absolutely contributes to that, and is, yeah, you can't tell really sometimes.
Since this was something you went on the IL with in September, just how would you describe, if any, the level of concern that it popped up?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's, like I said, that's why we're being conservative here. So, you know, the concern, we just got to get him symptom-free and then back on the mound. But I think the fact that there was an injury last year and we have symptoms of that injury again makes you want to be conservative.
See, that's part of the reason why I didn't want guys playing Monday night. Mm-hmm. Is that you worry about I'm less worried about arms, to be honest, but I am worried about guys pulling muscles, that sort of thing. So it is a little scary when you hear a manager concede that the cold may have played a role in one of their best pitchers getting hurt.
Yeah, I don't know enough about pitching physiology to tell you that throwing in the cold led to that. But, you know, everybody was talking about it, and I would press people and be like, well, how? And they'd be like, oh, I don't know. It just feels
well,
right. It's uncomfortable.
The biomechanical aspect of it probably, like, for example, how many guys say how easy it is to get warm when the weather's warm?
Right. So heat down, cool up, heat down, or heat up, cool down, heat up, cool down. Like, you sit down between innings and it's so cold and it gets tight again. So, yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe it's as simple as that. Because everybody's kind of pointing to it, but even Counsell right there in the cut is like, you don't know sometimes. We know this much, that Justin Steele mentioned the words sore and tight, about how the elbow felt, and that's a little scary. And he said that he's hoping for a minimum stay on the injured list. Counsell said that too, but people at the ballpark were doubtful that was going to be the case, that it would be a little bit longer than just the minimal stay is the initial guess. And that means Colin Ray, who is going to be your long guy, is your fifth starter. And it means Ben Brown, who's scuffled a couple of times, will stay in that rotation. And Javier Assad, who still has to, like, make a rehab assignment, is not yet ready to be in the mix. So they called up a reliever, Ethan Roberts. Expect Colin Ray to be your TBD on Sunday.
I know that you were there and you heard it, but for Cubs, the Cub fan that's getting their car from Wrigley and wanted to hear from Justin Steele, here's what he said about the injury and about the cold.
I was going through my start the other day. I was talking to Tommy and Counts throughout the start and stuff. I was like, you know, arms starting to tighten up on me a little bit. I was at the fourth, fifth inning. Was just doing stuff in between innings to keep it warm, moving around and stuff. Told him the next day, you know, the trainers and stuff, I want to come in, do a lot of recovery stuff, you know, red light, do everything I can to get the recovery process underway. They asked how it was doing. I was like, it's, you know, kind of sore, kind of tight. And then, they just made the decision to go ahead and put me on the IL.
Just as similar to late last year?
Yeah, I would say it's a similar feeling.
And did that kind of give you sort of a roadmap of how you can take the time and how quick you can get back? Because you did come back late last year on that.
Yeah, I would say it's similar to, you know, the previous situations that we encountered with it.
Did they give you an MRI yesterday?
No.
Will they
I believe that is the plan.
You've talked so much about wanting to be out there for 30-plus starts. Mm-hmm. Just like, what's the emotional reaction?
I mean, frustration. Just frustration.
Do you have any idea, as far as, are you optimistic about this being a minimum stay or anything like that?
I would say I'm leaning that way. I was you know, coming in yesterday prepared to kind of go about the, you know, normal rotation, normal standard in-between start stuff. And, yeah, you know, now we'll, I guess, just be able to figure out exactly what it is and attack it. And, yeah.
When you said you felt it during your start, at that point, did you feel like it was anything serious?
No, I was, you know, wanting to continue pitch. Felt good. Felt like I was executing pitches and stuff, so I wanted to, you know, keep going.
You've had to deal with a lot of different adversity throughout your career. Where do you go to, you know, mentally to, you know, get through that? How do you toughen?
Just take it a day at a time. Yeah, I've dealt with a lot of injuries, unfortunately, with my career, and that was kind of something I've always defaulted to, is just taking it a day at a time.
So you were feeling it, and then the next day, like yesterday, you were hoping you'd be okay, and it just didn't subside?
Yeah, it was just, I would say, normal, you know, tightness, soreness from pitching and stuff, and yeah.
Were you tempted to not take this LSAT and push through it and try to make your next start?
I mean, I was coming in to the day prepared to make my next start and stuff, but they made the decision to put me on the aisle.
Have you tested it playing catch or anything like that yet?
No.
Just what do you think about the kind of the depth of this group that you guys have to kind of, whether it's you or somebody else, to kind of weather this type of situation?
Yeah, I think we definitely have the depth in place to take care of situations like this. We've proven that in the past.
You know, it's impossible to even conjure up possibilities here, but, you know, having a pitch in cold weather, do you think that was a contributing factor? Or you?
I mean, I would definitely say so. You know, just velocity speaking, I would say Valdi's velo was a little bit down. I'd say everybody's velo was a little bit down that day. Just in general over this series, it's been that way just with the weather and stuff.
Man, so the velo being down in the cold, and he again says definitely the cold did affect it.
I'm not surprised by that. I'm not willing to say that that's what it is yet, because the velo being down could just be what's been going on with his arm. You know what I mean? Like he could then be like, oh, well, it's because it was cold. That's what's good. So that I am a little concerned that there hasn't been an MRI and there is going to be one, but you're trying to figure out what the cause of it is, and you want to make sure that the cold is not, is the cold causal or not?
I don't know. Look, there's a couple other things to talk about with this game, but let me ask you this: what do sports people know less about, scouting quarterbacks and predicting their future, or the health of the major league pitching arm?
Oh, the health of the major league pitching arm by a mile.
Well, I don't know if it's by a mile.
By a mile.
People get quarterbacks wrong all the time, Lawrence.
They do, but
they get quarterback. But I'm just saying,
they get quarterback wrong though because they're desperate. Where with this thing, there's so many different factors that you have to put in.
All right. Well, the point is, like, he feels sore and tight after every time he throws. These
right.
guys always feel sore and tight, and then they'll wrap their entire arm in, like, in ice and ace bandages for 2 days. Then they'll be like, yep, I'm ready to go again. And now this time it's like, I'm not ready to go again. Okay, well, let's put you on a list until you're ready to go again. People out here guessing like crazy on this stuff.
That's why I'm saying, like, I personally didn't like the idea of them playing. You know that. We talked about it. But I don't want that to now be confirmation bias. Like, I look at it and say, maybe that was a reason. But then when I hear him say, well, the velo was down, I don't know it being cold is causal to the velo being down.
I understand.
And that maybe he's pre-injured and he didn't know it until he started throwing. The other thing is when do you let a guy work through something versus when do you tell a guy, nah, you come sit next to me? And I don't know what counsel's threshold is for that. And I wonder about that part of it too. There are people that are texting about that too. Like if he said this is what was going on during the game, do you pull him because that's what's going on in the game and take into account that there are elements that may play a role in whether or not he's making it worse or better.
They were up big. They were up big in that game. It was 7-0 that game at one point, right?
Yep.
And he was out there for the seventh when, I mean, you could argue he didn't need to be, but he wanted to be. And it's nice to save your bullpen, et cetera. And I remember JD saying the other night, during the game, like, this is one of those games where Steele could probably finish if he wanted to, because a lot of times pitchers love pitching in the cold. Like, they love it because hitters are overwhelmed and don't want to swing the bat and don't enjoy contact.
You can attack the zone too when the wind's blowing in at 40 miles an hour. Yeah. You know, you can leave a ball up, you know, because the wind's probably going to knock it down.
Yeah, the story of the TV broadcast today was Jack White of the White Stripes in the stands, and Boog talking about Jack White every time he could, and understandably so. And the couple eating the hot dog like they were in The Lady and the Tramp, with one from each side. Lawrence, did you see them, and have you ever eaten a hot dog like that with anybody in your life?
I did see them, and no, I've never done that with a glizzy.
I...